from this morning's class, there's some reference to three consecutive verses that come earlier in Canto 7. Canto 7, Chapter 5, Texts 30, 31, 32, starts Matirna Krishne Paratak Svatova. So, the Sanskrit was given, the meaning was given, and in the following two verses, I want to see if, because they're very, very important verses, in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, they're spoken by Prahlad, they're being repeated in these prayers. So, I want to strike that chord one more time. See if anybody can remember what those verses were describing. Matirna Krishna Paratak Svatova Mito Vipadmira Grahakritana Adanta Govur Vishatam Tamishram Punash Punak Charvata Charvanana. I see one hand. Do I see any other hands? One, two. Four and a half. No. Okay. Go ahead.
Those senses are uncontrolled. They cannot, their mind cannot be fixed on Krishna, even by their own effort or by the instructions of others or the combination of both.
Yeah.
And they are continuously
playing the tune. Yeah. That's that verse. Very good. Did you hear that in the back? You did. You have good hearing. Okay. Then the next verse. What was the next verse about? Can anybody remember? Go ahead. Look at this, he knows the Sanskrit too. Natte vidu svarta katim hi Vishnu. Did you learn it since this morning? Or you knew it already?
I knew it.
Did you review it this morning after class? Yeah?
Yes,
a little bit. I didn't tell him we were going to quiz him on it either.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the essence of that verse? Bahi artha maninas.
People don't know that their self-interest is to worship Lord Vishnu.
Right, but they're what bahi artha maninas, what are they thinking? Bahir. Artha. Maninas. They're thinking, manina, they're thinking bahir artha. That which is valuable is in external things, in worldly things. They're attached to the material conception of life. Those who are attached to the material conception of life do not know.
They follow the blind leaders.
But what was it? They don't know. Sva artagatim hi Vishnu. That the real, what the real goal is sva arta.
Their self-interest is to worship Lord Vishnu.
There we go. Okay, so what do they do?
They worship the materialistic leaders, and it's like blind, blind leading the blind.
Yes. Adanta govir vishatam tamishram. They go into a hellish existence, and the bluffing leaders take the foolish followers to the same position. Okay. Suffering the threefold miseries. What's the last line? Andan. Andaya Tandar Upaniyamanais, which means
they are like bound by a tightrope.
Yeah, they are. The three modes of nature. The threefold miseries bound by the ropes of the modes of nature. That's what they know. Very good. You know the last one too? No. What's the last one speaking about? Go ahead.
One must bathe in the dust of lotus feet of the devotees.
The last one has taken Rajo Bishekam, Abhishek, unless they bathe or smear the dust of, take the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee and place that upon their body or smear it on their body. Then what happens?
Then only one can understand the body.
Unless that is done, one cannot become free from material contamination. So, Prahlad is, in those verses, he's contrasting the spiritual position with the material position. And he's very, very strongly and vividly advocating taking the spiritual position. And he doesn't have a kind word to say about those who are following foolishly, a blind person, and he has less kind things to say about those that are leading other blind persons, although they are also blind. But he has a lot of kind things to say about those who know the goal of life and are living it and can provide the right association to take less fortunate persons to the proper position. So now how did that tie in with what we were discussing, what are in his prayers? From the 9th chapter. So that was the 5th chapter. How does that tie in with what we discussed from the 9th chapter this morning? So let's start with the Matirna Krishne Parata Svata Karmanaha. That was in a verse from scripture Brahma Tantra quoted by Madhvacharya. What was Madhvacharya indicating?
Those whose service is so powerful that even when it is performed by an unqualified person, materially not so qualified person, then it can uplift him to that position, which cannot be done by Partha or Svata or Karmata, any of those things. Even they may be disqualified by any of these things. But by devotional service, one can become situated in that position of transcendental happiness, which cannot be had any other way.
Could you hear in the back? You're too busy getting your positions back. Could you hear towards the back? Did you hear what he said? No. Do you mind repeating it? Especially the microphone here, because otherwise I can repeat it. But just.
Madhvacharya was. This morning we were reading that Madhvacharya was saying that although one may be disqualified by himself or by others' instruction or by one's activities, devotional service is so powerful that it can put us in a transcendental position immediately. That was the essence.
Yeah. And then specifically, in complete contrast to this Matir Nakrishne Paratak Svatova, you explained that very nicely. That the person's Adanta Gobir, Vishatam, Tamishram, those persons who are attached to sense gratification cannot come to the position of fixing their consciousness, fixing their mind upon Krishna. either by paratha or svatha, by their own efforts or by the help of others, or combination. But this specific verse quoted by Madhvacharya says that one who is fixed in Krishna consciousness, one who is situated properly in devotion to the Supreme Lord, they're perfectly happy when they're engaged in the activities which are assigned to them by others. They're engaged in their own duties, or they're engaged in their worldly responsibilities. They're happy in any circumstance of life. And the summary is that they can be uplifted to such a fortunate position because it's so attractive, the Supreme Lord is so attracted by their quality of devotion, regardless of their material lack of qualification or having material qualification. It doesn't matter as far as the Lord is concerned. Now, how is that, how does that, we're going backwards, that's good. How does that fit into the prayer, the specific prayer that Prahlad offered? What was the specific prayer that Prahlad offered in that regard? It had to do with some special mercy that he received, although he was claiming to be unqualified to receive a certain kind of mercy. What was that? Remember? Yeah.
Lord Narasimha placed his hands on the head of Brahma, which he did not do to even Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma.
Or even Lakshmi. So he's using that example to illustrate the merciful nature of the Lord, and our acharyas are taking it to illustrate the very benedictory nature of devotion. How can we attract the Supreme Lord? Opulence? Strength? Beauty? Influence? Power? Control? Just see how much I can control. None of those things attract the Supreme Lord. Now, also working backwards in the prayers, what did Prahlad have to say about his first-hand realization about one who does possess those things, like his father, who possessed all those things? What did?
They perish with time. Time perishes them.
Time perishes them. How powerful, Prahlad was saying, how powerful was Hiranyakashipu? Incomparably powerful, so powerful that he could vanquish the demigods in his sarcasm, just raising his eyebrows. They were finished. He was so powerful. And the demigods, they control the universe. And Hiranyakashipu was controlling them. And his control was taken like that. And his conclusion was, therefore, what was his conclusion? Based on that experience?
Therefore, I'm afraid of the time.
I don't want those things. I'm not. Even if you offer those things to me, inherit the kingdom of my father, no thank you. But instead, what do I want?
I want protection at your lotus feet.
And specifically, how does he get access to that protection at his lotus feet?
Apprenticeship of pure devotees.
Being placed in the association, in the care, to be trained by one of the Lord's pure devotees, which is the same as this Rajobhishekam. Taking their merciful association. And we're going to hear some more about that. I'm kind of losing track of whether it's day or night this evening. Yesterday I came out at 11 o'clock to pass on some good news to you, and I realized it was 11 o'clock at night, not 11 o'clock in the day. Lost. I don't know what. Okay, so I still didn't tell you the good news, but I'll tell you after. So going to cover a few verses, but this theme of taking shelter of the good instructions of the Lord's devotee. I emphasize this point that there's a one-to-one correlation, put it in mathematical terms, between taking shelter at the Lord's lotus feet and being in the apprenticeship position with one of the Lord's pure devotees. He's asked the Lord, please guide me and instruct me and train me in the ways of devotional service. But he knows that actually what that means is to have one of your pure devotee representatives train me. It's the same thing. Prabhupada certainly taught us that. When Krishna says, surrender unto me in Bhagavad Gita, and one of Krishna's devotees says, surrender unto Krishna, the speaking is the same. Same. Not close, but same. It's the same. It's Krishna speaking, and Krishna speaking. He's speaking through his pure devotee representative. There's a very nice way that's described or stated by the Supreme Lord in when Lord Vishnu appears at the sacrificial ceremony of Maharaj Nabi before the appearance of Rishabhdev. So Nabi and his wife Meru Devi, under the arrangements of the Brahmana, devotees of the Lord, they're performing a yajna so that Nabi can have a son like the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is called, as happens in all yajnas. The ceremonial part is, there's the invocation where you invite the Supreme Lord to come and preside over the yajna. Right? And so he came. He came on the back of Garuda and Haribol. And of course he didn't come alone. He came with all his entourage and great rishis and sages and all the devatas and whole entourage. They came right to the yajna. And he stood before all the assembled yajna performers. And must have been pretty exciting, huh? And the brahmanas, they offer various prayers, and the Lord then speaks to the brahmanas. But he says that the brahmanas, they're so dear to me, that because they've made this request, I've come. Just because they made this request. And then when Rishabhdev is presenting his teachings to his son, so that's Lord Vishnu appears as Rishabhdev. So when Rishabhdev is instructing his sons, he's also glorifying the brahmanas and says, the brahmanas, they're so dear to me, they're actually the manifestations of my very self. And when sacrificial offerings are made unto the fire, into the fire of sacrifice, that by that offering I'm eating, but I enjoy even more than those things directly offered to me. I enjoy more when the brahmanas are fed, and by their eating I'm eating. Directly. When, after I left here the last time, I went back to America. We had a very nice yajna ceremony where the deities, Radha Damodar, very famous deities that were worshipped for years, Radha Krishna deities that were worshipped, just traveling in a bus two sannyasis and a group of brahmacharis just traveling all over America, having fabulous, one of the most, Vishnu Chan Swami, maybe you've heard some of his recordings, sing so devotionally that it would melt anyone's heart. It melted many hearts, his singing. And they worshipped Radha Damodar, took them on their bus. Many famous stories about Radha Damodar. Anyway, after some time, they were placed on one of our farm communities in mid-Pennsylvania. And they were in a place that wasn't so nice. I mean, it was reasonable, but not so nice for a number of reasons. One of the reasons was directly above them was a bathroom. And sometimes they had a plumbing problem. Anyway, so I won't go into it. So it wasn't so nice. So finally an arrangement was made that another temple was built for them, and it was a wonderful ceremony for the inviting the deity to come reside in their new temple. And one part of the ceremony, along with the oblations of ghee and grain into the fire, and the fire and svaha and all the mantras, there was one special mantra where 100 times they were offering sweet rice, not just grains and ghee, but sweet rice into the fire. And the priest, Chaturatma, was saying, Lord Vishnu really likes this particular offering him sweet rice 100 times. Big pot of sweet rice. But even more than accepting sweet rice offered directly 100 times is when offerings are made to the brahmanas and they, on his behalf, accept those offerings. And when they similarly, when they speak the message of the personality of Godhead, the personality of Godhead is directly speaking, personality of Godhead is directly receiving. That's how dear the devotees of the Lord are to the Supreme Lord. The pure devotee is so dear to the Supreme Lord. Rishabhdev says, they're more dear to me than my very self. Krishna says the same thing to Uddhava in the 11th canto. You should know it, that my unalloyed devotees, they're more dear to me than me. Or that through the agency of pure devotion, the Supreme Lord gives himself. He places himself, we mentioned this already, he places himself at the disposal of the devotee. That's how powerful the devotee is. But the devotee, like Prahlad, is not thinking, oh, I'm very powerful. Look out, here I come. There's no pride. He's thinking this process of devotional service is so powerful that it can attract your mercy, that you'll place your hand upon my head and give this benediction upon me that you don't even give to anyone else, even though I'm completely unqualified. Trying to illustrate this love and reciprocation and wonderful exchange that takes place between the one who is engaged in the process of devotion and the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lovable Object. There's a reciprocation of loving exchanges. And because of, so now we're going to hear what flows from that is, it's according from the Lord's side, he's equal. What he's responding to is the consciousness of his particular devotee. So according to the degree of love, the degree of surrender, the Lord reciprocates exactly. Listen to the verse. Oh my Lord, unlike an ordinary living entity, you do not discriminate between friends and enemies, the favorable and the unfavorable, because for you, There is no conception of higher and lower. Nonetheless, you offer your benediction according to the level of one's service. You offer your benediction according to the level of one's service. Exactly as a desire tree delivers fruits according to one's desires and makes no distinction between the lower and the higher. So a desire tree stands there, and according to the desire, according to the consciousness of the individual approaching that desire tree, I want a mango. I want wealth. I want power. I want control. I want beauty. I want sense gratification. I want... So one may be material consciousness. I want liberation. I want out of here. This business is crazy. Or one may want the quality of your devotion. One may want the loving reciprocation of the Supreme Lord. So from the Supreme Lord's side, for what Prahlada is teaching, is samoham sarva bhuteshu, right? Krishna doesn't have na me dvesho sti na priyaha. He doesn't have dvesha and priya. He doesn't have favorites. I like you, I don't like the other guy. From Krishna's side, there isn't any of that. Doesn't have any of that partiality. But it appears to be partiality because of the quality of the consciousness of the individual. So what Prabhupada is saying in the purport is that based on this principle, well, does anybody want to guess what's the implication of this principle? I'll get everybody's attention at least. We're responsible for our own suffering. The Lord is not responsible. If our condition is a condition of suffering, well, guess what? It's something that our consciousness earned us. Something has brought this difficulty about. It's coming from our side. Because the Lord is a desire tree who makes no distinctions. So somewhere, at some point in time, some bad desires and following the bad desires, bad activities, and now the fruit of that is coming from the desire tree. We're held responsible for those things we desire. So, he says it twice in the purport. Therefore, one's position is determined by one's desires. The Lord is not responsible for the higher and lower grades of our existence. He gives several shlokas to support that. So how does this connect to what Prahlad's receiving a benediction? Again, somebody want to guess? He's saying, I have no qualification, but you've given your mercy to one who is not at all qualified. And right after that he's saying, you don't have partiality. So what is it that has brought that mercy upon Prahlad, which he didn't deserve by material qualification, which the Lord isn't attracted by anyways? It's one thing. Association with Narada. He's gonna put that in a big neon sign and show it to the Lord. It's the mercy of Narada. And I know why you're showing mercy upon me. I got some mercy from Narada. And so therefore, you're giving me the special mercy. I have access to devotional service. I have knowledge that fortifies that devotional service. There's detachment from all this craziness of material existence, which my father exemplified to the maximum. And it's by the mercy of Narada. I don't have any attraction for any of that. I just want shelter at your lotus feet. I just want to be with Narada. He's not saying, Narada, thank you very much, Narada. Now I have what I really want, which isn't you. I want to be with the Supreme Lord. You've given me that. Thanks a lot, Narada. See you later. It's been nice knowing you. I'll send you a donation in the mail.
Yeah.
With a little thank you card. Now I got what I want. No. He just wants to be with Narada. That's the emphasis that's coming. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires, one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes, following the general populace. Sound familiar? A couple of times during my visit here, some of you made some comments like that. But your servant, Narada Muni, kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? It's in the Prabhupada quotes it again in the purport. Soham katam na visraje tava britya sevam. Britya sevam, the service of your britya, your pure devotee. We know this phrase soham from the Shruti mantras. Soham, that's what impersonalists meditate upon. So this is the meditation of the devotee. Soham, saha, aham. So they like to, I am that. I am Brahman. But I am that person, saha, aham. I am that kind of person that cannot live. I can't think of living, I can't live without being in that service to Narada. And really that's smart. Besides it's loving. But just see what that little association that he had with Narada has done for him. Who would want to give up that association? He just wants to go on in that association. Because in that association, what happens? Shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord will also be there. Like I mentioned this morning. Should we think of you, Śrīla Prabhupāda, or should we think of Krishna? And Prabhupāda's, how can you think of one without the other? But access to the one is through the representative. That's Krishna's system. Narada has explained the system. Prahlad has learned the system. And he's fixed in that position. How can I leave his service? Here's how Prabhupada in the purport explains. As will be seen in later verses, even though Prahlad Maharaj was directly offered all the benedictions he might have desired, he refused to accept such offerings. Like sometimes it happens that in the course of devotional service, somebody will offer something. I've heard it said, how could I say no? And in some cases, you know, accepting it for oneself. They really wanted me to have it. How could I say no? Prahlad is saying no. It's not an offense to say no. He's The Lord is wants to offer him anything and everything. But there's a certain category of anything and everything he's saying no to. But that's because he's saying yes to something else. On the contrary, he asked the Lord to engage him in the service of his servant Narada Muni. This is the symptom of a pure devotee. One should serve the spiritual master first. It is not that one should bypass the spiritual master and desire to serve the Supreme Lord. This is not the principle for a Vaishnav. Narottam Das Thakur says, Tandera charana sevi bhakta sanivas janame janame hoy e abhivas. Just like in worship of the deity. So those of you that haven't been trained in the deity worship yet, you should understand a principle. The principle is in Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sanatan Goswami. There's procedures in the worship of the deity. And one of the essential things, even before approaching the deity, is prayers are offered to the spiritual master that on your behalf, with your permission, may I serve the deity. So it's understood that the seva is on behalf of the one who is representing the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, I have no access. Actually, one is assisting the spiritual master in this seva. That's the consciousness of the sevite. At the time, the tradition, in fact, is that at the time of Diksha, a spiritual master will give or may give the disciple the deity for the disciple to worship. Perhaps Shalagram Shiva or some deity to worship along with the mantras for worship, at least with Gayatri Mantra. And then it's understood this is part of their as part of the qualification that they're now recognized that they're able to perform, but then they're expected to perform that worship on behalf of. Anyway, you get the idea. So not only the worship of the deity, but practically any service that one does, it's service to Krishna. Devotional service, it's service to Krishna. And one serves Krishna, one approaches Krishna through the mercy of the spiritual master. And one doesn't want to give that up. It's just, it's not in principle, it's not scriptural. In terms of ordinary transcendental affection, it's unthinkable. It's a material principle to even consider that way. Anyway, so Prabhupada is instructing the spiritual principle. He's demonstrating that spiritual principle. It's right within his prayers to the Supreme Lord. Please keep me always in the company of Narada, under his direction, in his association. At the conclusion of the purport, Prabhupada writes, therefore Prahlad said, how can I give up the service of my spiritual master who has favored me in such a way that now I am able to see you face to face? Prahlad Maharaj prayed to the Lord that he might continue to engage in the service of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. One more verse. My Lord, this is text 29. My Lord, O unlimited reservoir of transcendental qualities, you have killed my father Hiranyakashipu and saved me from his sword. He had said very angrily, quote, if there is any supreme controller other than me, let him save you. I shall now sever your head from your body. That's his father. Therefore, I think that both in saving me and in killing him, you have acted just to prove true the words of your devotee. There is no other cause. This is a high court judge here. 6-year-old Prahlad Maharaj, making his final verdict. He's carefully considered the case, and he's giving a verdict. The verdict is, both the killing of Hiranyakashipu and the saving of Prahlad is for one reason, and one reason only, and that's to uphold the word of his devotee. Now, what was that word of his devotee? If you can remember back, I'll help you. Hiranyakashipu was in the palace of Hiranyakashipu while he was away doing his austerities, and demigods came with their military and saw his pregnant wife of Hiranyakashipu, and they're ready to do her in, or at least a child. And Narada said no, and right? You're familiar with this. So then Narada said, turn her over to me and I'll protect her. He took her to his hermitage. And while there, she requested a benediction. She served Narada very, very nicely and heard from Narada very nicely and forgot everything later because of her attachments for Hiranyakashipu and his bad association. But she asked Narada for a benediction. And the benediction was, please protect this child. And it was twofold. Please let this child not be born until Hiranyakashipu returns, and please protect this child. Because she also understood that he's an exalted soul. I mean, Narada had said it outright, right in her presence. Within her womb is a pure devotee. So, please protect the soul. So Narada's not Krishna. He's the one who can protect if there's going to be protection. But he granted her that benediction. And so Lord Nisringadeva was upholding the words of Narada. That was Prahlad's conclusion. Because Narada had said that, the Lord was making that word. He's upholding the word of his devotee, Narada. And the second is that he's showing his character of Bhakta Vatsala. What does Bhakta Vatsala mean? That he's very affectionate. Very affectionate to his devotee. So when Prahlad was put into difficulty with Hiranyakashipu threatening, he tried so many other ways to kill him. With my own sword, I'll cut off your head, my little darling son, 6-year-old boy. So, Lord Nisringadeva made his appearance to protect his devotee and uphold the word of, to maintain his known for, his character, to protect his devotee and to uphold the word of Narada. So Prahlad was right from the very beginning that this very fierce form of Lord Nisringadeva that was terrifying everybody, nothing to be afraid of, certainly for the non-devotee, but not at all for the devotee. And therefore this, the same idea that in all circumstances the devotee is very happy, the devotee is ready to honor and glorify all of the Lord's wonderful and transcendental activities. And so, just to conclude, we're not always in that consciousness. Like somebody commented after everybody left, there was several very nice questions. One of them was, it's very easy to have this sense of the false shelter of material enjoyment and the sense of, there's a nice atmosphere for feeling those feelings and understanding those understandings. And maybe also in the quiet of one's study place and contemplating these things, but in the thick of life's chase, very easy to forget those things. modes of nature become very, very prominent and take hold of our consciousness and carry it away. So how is it possible for Prahlad, in the thick of, there it is with the sword of Hiranyakashipu raised and the threat to take his life, that he's perfectly calm? What's the answer? The answer is through that agency of his association with Narada. He had a very clear understanding and full faith in the position of the Lord and the medium of devotional service for approaching him. He was protected through the agency of that association. And stepping outside of the agency of that association, the modes of nature rule. The crushing wheel of time is there. And even if one does accumulate some so-called protection by those material arrangements, the wheel of time crushes into powder. All those arrangements. Always. However, the devotee, like Prahlad, has taken shelter properly, and so he's protected. It's not that that means that Prahlad will live forever and he'll never die, but it means that he'll always be protected. He's realizing that. He's taking the right path to achieve that. And he doesn't forget it in the presence of the Lord even. The same shelter that brought him to the presence of the Lord, he wants to maintain that shelter. So, any discussion or comments on our topics this evening? Yes.
How to live in integrity and control senses except training of your devotees?
How do living entities
with uncontrolled senses accept the training of your devotees?
It's pretty hard. Those living entities that have uncontrolled senses have to learn to control their senses. So that's just the beginning point of instruction. So one of the through the Bhagavad Marga process is through controlling the tongue by vibrating and vibrating Krishna Katha, by vibrating the holy name and hearing the holy name and tasting Krishna Prasadam. Very important. Take Krishna Prasadam and to not take other things. Very important. Very important. It's a little thing, but very important thing for controlling the senses. Because by the teaching of Rupa Goswami, Atakshi Krishna Namadi, you know this verse? Atakshi Krishna Namadi, who knows the verse? Svayameva Spuratyada. So Jiva Dao. The tongue, if with the tongue is controlled, the other senses can become controlled. And when the other senses are controlled, Krishna can be approached. So the control of the tongue is very important to help control all the senses. And another item for sense control is regulation. Regulate your activities, starting with the tongue. Regulate when you eat. and how much you eat, not in a fanatic way, but in a principled way, and regulate your other activities. So Mangalarti is a very, very auspicious way to regulate activities, because in order to attend Mangalarti, you have to take rest early so that you can get up early so that you can attend Mangalarti and greet the day with greeting the Lord, and then perform chanting of mantra and so on. So regulating one's activity helps to control the senses. Even one may be undisciplined and unsense controlled. It's very effective. Those controlling the tongue and regulating activity. Very quickly the senses become so doable. So those are important parts. There's certainly more, but those are important beginning parts that an unsense-controlled person is helped to be brought into sense control. And it also helps in doing those things to stay in the association of others who are doing those things. Association of like-minded persons, sense-controlled persons. Very helpful. And then just to maintain the theme that Prahlad is developing here, once receiving those things that help one to control one's senses, there should be, properly, like Narada, like Prahlad, a great sense of gratitude to Narada for giving that means of controlling my otherwise uncontrolled senses, which then gives me at least the opportunity to go further on the path of approaching the Supreme Lord, approaching the goal of life, which I couldn't even have begun without that merciful association. There's another very important, I'm glad you're writing it down in your notebook, I hope you remember it. The sense of wanting to stay in that company and association in a serving position. When those things are accomplished, then the uncontrolled senses problem becomes more manageable. And actually, this is the same thing that Prahlad said earlier, when the fear of his own condition of life, he described that. I'm not afraid of your future, I'm afraid of my condition of material existence. Because I have this demoniac birth, and with that demoniac tendencies, and a material body that's the machine for those, fulfilling those demoniac propensities. So I'm very much afraid of my material condition of life. So his fear management principle was, let me take shelter of your lotus feet. Which means, take shelter of the association of Narada. Be placed in his care for apprenticeship training. Then, the uncontrolled and fearful situation comes under control. That's also there. If one is vrata, you know the meaning of vrata, right? Vrata. Vrata. What's the meaning? Vow. Right? Vrata vrata. Akadasi vrata. Right? Vrata means vow.
Grihavrata. I'm an avowed attached person. That's not your position. You may be attached, but you're not. I swear to God, I'm attached and forever attached, and so help me. God, I'm attached. You're not an atheist. And in that atheistic, committed atheistic position, just all over the place, wild senses. Yahoo! So, it's a different situation. And there are people like that. A lot of them. Come visit America sometime. Well, don't have to go to America. Downtown Delhi and Bombay, there's a lot of that. Yeah. Anything else? Yes.
What is the role of life for the spiritual master as well as the devotee is accompanying the Supreme Lord?
Yeah.
Now, when such a goal is met, asking for the service of Krishna, is it not following the instructions of the spiritual master?
He would do so. The idea is, as he's saying here,
my statement is,
I know what your statement is. I heard it. His statement is, soham katam nu visrajetava brichasevam. No way will I take that position without the service of Narada. Serve the Supreme Lord without Narada? No way. I'll never ask that. Thanks a lot, Narada. See you later. Now, Supreme Lord, little service. Thanks a lot. See you later. Three's a crowd. Just me and Krishna here. Me and the Sringadev. I want to serve it would be the desire of the spirit. I heard what your question was. It would certainly be the instruction of the spiritual master, serve the Supreme Lord. Now, going back for the third time this evening and repeating something from this morning, can one actually, Prabhupada's statement, can one actually think of approaching Krishna without the spiritual master? That's the point. And so, he's in the presence of the Supreme Lord. He wants to be with Narada and learn and be further instructed in the ways of devotional service from Narada. And why not? There's lots of reasons why. Give one good reason why not. There isn't one. Narada knows perfectly well how to train him further and further and further and further and further in the ways of devotional service. How did he get that far? Through Narada's mercy. He wants to go further and further in the ways of devotional service. He wants to be instructed in those ways of furthering his devotional service. Narada's the one. He says, can you please train me in the ways of devotional service? But he means through Narada. It's unthinkable. How can I leave his service? I can't think that thought. So if there was some prayer, if there was some prayer to be nicely situated in your devotional service, it would mean with through the agency and mercy of one's spiritual master. Yes.
If you see that, we find that whatever we learn and whatever we do, we learn everything from somebody else. Like we read books and we believe this, okay, this is true. But when it comes to accepting the instructions of spiritual master or the scriptures, it becomes very difficult. Mind rebels. Why does that happen?
Because we're rascals. It's true. We're puffed up rascals. We want to take the credit for everything. That's just our, you know, our puffed up, stupid nature. You know, why is it, even in material matters, we take so much from so many, and we hardly even say thank you. And we certainly don't remember those people, or do anything to reciprocate. How many persons have sacrificed for us in the course of our life? So many people. And, you know, we're strutting along thinking, what's the next thing we can take? We're so selfish. And that's, you know, we're trained that way. That's the name of the game. Anyway. Just like this discussion about you missed, there was one of the devotees that's behind this sacred wall here. Was asking a question about, or maybe you did hear that particular question about obstacles and people kind of giving you bad energy about you're getting involved in this thing, huh? And, you know, not wanting to lose that friendship. But, you know, there's, we don't really know what friendship is. We don't want to lose that which isn't friendship because that's all we know, but it's not real friendship. What is real friendship or what is real love? We don't know what that is. And when we see it, we can hardly even recognize it. It's too blinding. We want to make it into, you know, the other kind. You just take and run. Maybe say thank you. Run. It's impersonal. Prabhupada, like this question, I mean, it's a very nice question. Prabhupada's characterization of impersonal dealing includes this same idea, like the spiritual master is like a ladder that you use to get to scale a wall, and once you scale the wall, you don't need the ladder anymore, so you kick the ladder away. Now you're up there. Bye-bye ladder. Bye-bye spiritual. You don't need, it was just a means that you used the person to get what you want, and, you know, goodbye. Or, you know, it's inconsequential. That's impersonal. It's not our school. Our school is an interpersonal school. Teaching is not an impersonal teaching. Because Krishna says, that person is more dear to me than me. And you leave aside that person, you think you're going to have Krishna? Krishna doesn't like that at all. So awakening our love for Krishna includes, or is achieved through the medium of, this other, properly establishing this other relationship. And not otherwise. It's Krishna's arrangement. It's part of Krishna's loving network. Have some questions from around the wall here? Got the feeling something was coming through the wall. I'm sorry.
Why is it that we have to
question.
Yeah.
So, when I want to while serving, what do we have to think? Like, we are serving the Supreme Lord?
Yes, it's direct. It's direct. This Prabhupada calls this the mystery of disciplic succession. Serving through is not indirect. It's direct. He gives the example just like lenses, eye lenses, eyeglasses. I'm wearing a pair of eyeglasses. Now, the seeing is direct, but it's through the medium of the lenses. It's a material example. But we're serving Krishna. So the pujari who's serving the deity, they're touching the deity. It's direct. But their consciousness is, I'm doing this on behalf of, we use the word instrument. In Bhagavad Gita, it's nimittam matram. Krishna says to Arjuna, become my instrument. Arjuna is fighting. The pujari is worshipping. The speaker is speaking, the cook is cooking. I mean, if they're not attentive, they'll burn their hand or cut their finger. It's direct. But their consciousness is, I'm doing this on behalf of.
That, Angani Yasya Satalendriya Vrittimanti, the Supreme Lord, his senses are fully spiritual and he can eat by hearing. By hearing the prayers offered to him, he can accept the food and thereby eat through that method. He doesn't have to eat like we have to eat. He can eat like we eat also if he wants to. So, but the Lord is eating, and then there's this third possibility, and that is when the Brahmanas eat, it's actually the Lord is eating. Feeding the Supreme Lord by feeding the Brahmanas. Now, it looks like something else. Each one of those. But so, one who has faith in the scripture understands through that scriptural explanation, at least theoretically, one understands this is one of the ways of the Lord's eating. So, similarly, by the service that we perform, if we're in proper consciousness, that is, the proper consciousness is Prahlad, that he's before the Supreme Lord, but as he's offering these prayers to the Supreme Lord, he's recognizing that my only qualification to be here before you and my ability to speak anything properly, it's not me, it's Narada. I'm here. I'm before the Lord, I'm speaking, it's direct. But it's through the mercy of Narada, I'm Narada's representative. I'm Narada's instrument. He's with me. And that's his consciousness. And that's his qualification. That's why the Supreme Lord came, because he has that consciousness. Let's say this. In an advanced state, there is no separation. In our stage, it may be difficult to accommodate. It's either, because we have this binary way of looking at everything. It's either one or a zero. It can't be simultaneously both. It just can't be. But in the spiritual world, it can be. The Lord can be here and not here. He can be inside of everything and outside of everything. Everything can be within Him, and yet He is within everything. And you can't, that's materially impossible. So, the mystery of disciplic succession is that through the mercy of this descending feature of the Lord's merciful association, he makes himself present within the heart as Paramatma Antaryami and externally as the spiritual master. Although the spiritual master may be Jiva, Jiva Tattva, not Vishnu Tattva, the Lord represents
his spiritual potencies in that way. And he makes approach to him available in that way. So one is therefore, with that understanding, one who is in the presence of the Lord, like Prahlad, in the presence of the Lord, with him is the spiritual master, and he's conscious of it. And it's not an either or. It's not a one or a zero. It's both. He wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, from the affective side, from the feeling side, from the loving side, he wouldn't want to have it any other way. He wants the Lord's service. He wants to be in the Lord's service in the company of Narada, as the instrument or representative of Narada, being continually trained by Narada. And so it's personal at the same time. Very personal. Here's one for you, along the same line. If somebody, asks Prabhupada questions, Prabhupada, sometimes that I'm in anxiety about offering prayers because I'm here in America and I know you're in India and I know that it's time for you to take your rest. So if I'm saying a prayer, maybe I'm disturbing your sleep. What to speak of, you have so many disciples who are simultaneously offering prayers to you. And you've got to answer everybody. So maybe I shouldn't offer my prayers, because that'd be disturbing you. But it's so if one thinks of these things in a material way, then that, a question like that would make sense. Like we would literally place a phone call to Prabhupada at a time when we knew he was taking rest. Because that's using the agency of the material energy explicitly. But with these other, with matters that are directly connected to consciousness, these material limitations are superseded or transcended. So it's our, how do you simultaneously think of two things? Their mind is binary. That's why they can replicate through computers functions that the mind performs. Because the mind is binary, and computers are binary. Replicates behavior. But this isn't just a mental function, it's consciousness. Krishna isn't restricted. He's beyond duality. And one who's in contact with the Supreme Lord is similarly beyond duality. And the medium of devotional service carries one to that position beyond duality. So then one, in that loving the Supreme Lord situation, one can accommodate serving the Supreme Lord in the company and through the, as the representative of one spiritual master. It's not a conflict. It's part of the loving network of Krishna. I guess the concluding thing I'd like to say is don't try to understand it with the binary instrument, the mind, because it's outside the realm of the mind, the limits of duality to understand. But through the medium of devotional service, it can be experienced directly. Probably didn't satisfy you, but that's my answer.
Anything else?
My sacrifices were offering grains, ghee and sweetness to the Lord.
Yeah.
So by sankirtan, what we are offering to the Lord.
And by sankirtan, what are we offering? Well, we're performing that particular yajna which he is called for, or requested of us. Same as, so we're offering the function of vibration for our tongue and audition for our ears. And what is being vibrated and what is being heard is the holy name. So the object is Nama Prabhu. And the instrument is the tongue and the ear. And what's being sacrificed, or what's being offered, is our tendency or capacity for vibrating and for hearing. So it's very, very simple. The paraphernalia, very simple. We don't need a spoon. We don't need ghee. We don't need grains. We don't need wood for the fire. We need a tongue and an ear. Very simple process. Very simple. It's also, Prabhupada has described it like that, just like I just did. And Krishna is very pleased. It's a common sense thing. Even as a worldly person, if this, like say there's somebody in a class that's starting to fall asleep. This is the evening class, no one's falling asleep. But if someone was starting to fall asleep and we just started, as a speaker I noticed a certain devotee was falling asleep, so I just started speaking about them. Boy, they'd wake up real fast. So, speak in very low tones, so-and-so Prabhu over there. He's such a nice devotee. Very, very austere. He gets up extra early so that he can help all the other devotees get ready for Mangalarti. And sometimes during class, so-and-so Prabhu feels a little drowsy. But he's such a nice devotee. And you know, they're wide awake. And they're talking about me. So, Prabhupada explains, just as that tendency, the persons are very attentive when they're being spoken about. That tendency in us is manifest in Krishna. Krishna is pleased for a different reason than we're pleased. Our reasons are selfish. Krishna's reason is he's very pleased because it connects us again with him in a loving mood. He's pleased because it's our well-being is restored. Like a physician likes to see the patient becoming well. The teacher becomes happy when he sees the student is learning their lesson. Krishna is happy when he sees the part and parcel living entity is restoring the original consciousness. Krishna is pleased by that sacrifice of the holy name. We're offering our breath. We're offering our submission to the Supreme Lord in the form of vibrating his holy name.
Mistake, or disciples commit mistake, the reaction goes to spiritual master. So is it not unfair?
Is it not unfair?
Yeah.
Your question is that fair or not fair?
I think it is.
Is it correct or not correct, or is it fair or not fair? What's your question?
My question is it not unfair? I mean,
no, it's not unfair. It's a good rule. Because if you're taking, here's the thing. If you're taking responsibility for a dependent, that's a great responsibility. Let's just use the same principle in another channel. Supposing someday you get married. So you'll take that responsibility. And it's not, if the right way to take that responsibility is to recognize, just as the language is, you now have a dependent. Like when you file your income tax, you can declare a dependent. Then if you have a child, a dependent, another dependent. Now, do you not have some responsibility to those persons? Very clearly, there's a responsibility. Legally, if there's misconduct, you're implicated. Morally, you're implicated. Socially, you're implicated. Karmically, you're implicated. Because you've agreed to take that responsibility. So, when a person takes the position of being a teacher or spiritual master, voluntarily, no one, you know, compelled them to do so any more than you'd be compelled to be married or compelled to have a child. But you're agreeing to do that, volunteering to do that. You're taking responsibility. And responsibility, according to Scripture, is your responsibility is you're agreeing to deliver them from birth and death. That's a very, very serious responsibility. That's what it means. It's easy. Anyone can get a marriage license these days. You don't even have to have a marriage license. Just go and live with somebody. Common law marriage goes on. I don't know if it goes on in India so much. It goes on in America, regular thing. If it's not here, it'll come here soon. Like everything else. So, and then a life of irresponsibility. So there are lots of teachers that don't have a sense of responsibility like that. But that doesn't change the law of karma. But so then someone that does understand that law, does understand the responsibility, they take it very seriously. And therefore, not because, gee whiz, now you're my student, so don't make me suffer, but the other way around. Because you're my student, let me deliver you. And for those, part of that deliverance is I agree. It's not, we haven't signed a contract here, but that's part of the law, that I accept the reaction for your wrongdoings. It's right in Hari Bhakti Vilas. It's explicit. But there's all kinds of relationships that go on in society where that's the case. Just people are dull and they don't recognize that that's the case. Someone becomes the head of state, 1/6 of the sinful reactions of the people become the inherited responsibility of the head of state. Big time. Karma. So it better not become head of state unless you're qualified. Because then the duty of the head of state is to see that the citizens are engaged in their prescribed duties. And each one of those positions where there's some acceptance of some subordinate or dependent, there's a set of duties and responsibilities. One has to take it seriously. Therefore, it's not a good idea to have too many students or too many disciples, too many children, too many citizens. The real thing is once you become qualified. And from that side, it's certainly fair, because one is very qualified, some reaction comes. In the fire of devotional service, the reaction is burned.
That's the saving grace for the devotee. One who has a very intense fire of devotion can incinerate unlimited amounts of fuel supplied to it. But one has to, then one has to keep the fire of devotion very strong all the time. And not just to burn up the reactions of the ongoing simple activities or foolish activities of the student, but to train the student in proper activity and be protected by that fire of devotion. But it's a very consuming task. It's therefore brahmanas, qualified brahmanas are so valuable in society. They can continue in that position and be not affected because of